It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Is science all you need? That's the question at the heart of a talk next Monday at Iowa State University by a noted researcher who has participated in many conversations about the relationship between science and religious faith. Troy Van Voorhis is a professor in the Department of Chemistry at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. He joins me now. Hello, Professor Van Voorhis.
Hello, Ben.
Start off, before we get to kind of the crux of what you wanted to talk about, the mix between science and faith, or the facts that they don't mix so well sometimes, tell us a little bit about your area of scientific work.
Well, I'm a chemist, and I do a lot of work at the interface between chemistry and physics, trying to understand the processes that go on in things like solar panels and in photoelectrochemical systems, trying to understand how we could better convert sunlight into useful things like electricity and chemical fuels.
Mm-hmm. At one point in your scientific career, you became interested in this intersection of science and faith. When did that happen?
I've always been interested in this intersection, just primarily because I'm a thinking person, and they're both important parts of my life, and I like to think how they're integrated. I think maybe the turning point started when I became a professor and students started asking me questions about one side or the other and how they work together, which forced me to maybe think a little bit more about it so that I made sure that I had actually thought through the sort of thought-provoking questions that kept getting brought up.
Mm-hmm. And you are a person of faith or not?
I am.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what did you notice when you examined it? Why do we think of science and religion, perhaps wrongly so, as sort of oil and water that don't mix?
Well, you know, one of the things that kept coming up is that one of the biggest problems here are the misperceptions that people have about how science and faith approach things. You know, one of the most common things that I saw was that you'd get people who seemed to think that science and faith disagreed at the level of facts, you know, that science had one account of the factual events, you know, things like whether the Earth revolved around the sun or the sun around the Earth, you know, how what the origins of species are, how old the universe is, that science had one story of the facts of these events, and that religious traditions existed primarily to provide a separate set of facts. And then you could certainly see how they would come into conflict with each other. But as it turns out, most religions actually don't primarily exist to provide a separate set of facts about the observable universe.
Mm-hmm. And does science in that way provide the certainty in this conception of it?
Well, no, because that's also another misperception that people had, which is the certainty that people think they get out of science. So certainty is always derived from somewhere else. Science provides us evidence, and we can use that evidence to come to conclusions. But certainty is always a subjective thing. That is, it has to do with the subject. And, you know, to give an illustration of that, you know, you and I, when presented with the same sets of scientific evidence, might come to different conclusions about whether a particular hypothesis was true. You know, if given, for example, a bunch of data about carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere, one of the two of us might be convinced that those CO2 levels were causing climate change, and the other one might not, mm-hmm. Because the certainty is subjective. It's separate from the objective facts.
What about this idea that is in popular culture that in order to be a good scientist, you do need to be an atheist?
Well, that's partly based on sociology, the fact that, you know, if you do look at higher and higher levels of science, you see decreasing numbers of peoples of faith, to the point where they did a study in the National Academy a number of years back and found that the percentage of people of faith of various religions in the National Academy was in the single digits, percentage-wise. And, you know, which was kind of jarring, given that the vast majority of people in the American population would self-identify as some form of religion. And so I think from that, people sort of make the leap of saying that, well, there must be some cause, and that cause is somehow science, that to be a good scientist or a great scientist, you have to give up faith. And I think that's false. There is a sense in which it's true, in that to be a good scientist, you do have to give up certain biases, namely confirmation biases, that would cause you to misinterpret your data or to interpret your data to support a conclusion that is not justified. But religious faith doesn't necessarily cause confirmation biases. It just means that you have to be aware of the faith that you hold and how it might interact with the scientific observations you make.
Have you, as you've progressed through your career, have you been pulled in the direction against your faith? You said you're a person of faith, but has that been a struggle?
It hasn't been a struggle in that I feel that my observation of the natural world, so I'm a natural scientist as a chemist, to me, the sort of order and structure of the natural world provides a very, very strong argument for a creator, for a theistic point of view, that there is a God, that there is someone who set these things in motion and who organized the world, who set up the natural laws. I feel that's a much stronger and more coherent argument and explanation for what we observe in science than the idea that it's just, you know, random chance completely coming together to make all of this work out just so. And so in that sense, I haven't felt that science pushes me towards any type of atheistic worldview.
Mm-hmm. I bet you've had the opportunity, at least, to have some spirited conversations with fellow scientists.
Yes. So some scientists, of course, take the opposite viewpoint and say, you know, well, I think that atheism provides the most satisfying explanation of the facts that we have. And, we can have spirited discussions about this. I think the only viewpoint that I have to disagree with is there are some people who have a spirited discussion saying that atheism is the only possible consistent viewpoint with science, which I think is manifestly untrue.
Mm-hmm. Let's say I am one of those people who say atheism, the more you learn about science, about nature, about the things we're discovering, I just can find it easier to rule out a creator. What do you say? I guess I'm asking you in an elevator pitch to make the case.
Well, I mean, I think it's, you know, there are many, many reasons that I feel like that creation is organized in such a way as to point towards a creator. I mean, one of the best arguments for me as a person who thinks very mathematically about things is something that Eugene Wigner pointed out many years ago, which is that it's very unreasonable that mathematics works as well as it does. Namely, that this human conception of how we add numbers and measure things, that this works so, so well in describing the physical world around us. It would seem very, very coincidental that something like the universe, if it's completely, completely random and not designed by any kind of sentient being, that the universe would be designed in such a way that sentient beings like us can apply something like mathematics and be very quantitative in our descriptions of it.
Mm-hmm. Is that different than the idea? Is that different than the idea of the so-called watchmaker?
So this idea of the watchmaker, I mean, it's consistent with this. So as I've said, science doesn't necessarily push me in the direction of atheism. You know, science does support this idea potentially of a watchmaker God, a God who sort of created the universe, set it in motion, and then has used the physical laws of the universe to direct the events to the place that we are at now. And so, the watchmaker is, one consistent sort of theistic viewpoint, one that believes in God and is not atheistic, that is, I think, completely and totally consistent with any scientific observations we make, and by itself would be more consistent for me or more satisfying than a purely atheistic viewpoint. That being said, most religions are not religions of a watchmaker God. Most religions are religions of a God who set the universe in motion and did something else.
Mm. If you just joined us, Troy Van Voorhis is my guest, professor in the Department of Chemistry at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. He'll be giving a talk about the intersection of science and faith next Monday at Iowa State University. Is Science All You Need? The topic of his talk. You mentioned other faiths, and that's good, because I wanted to ask you, we are primarily a Christian country in the U.S. Are there certain faiths that are better than others at melding with science?
Well, one of the reasons, for myself, I, come from this sort of primarily Judeo-Christian culture, and so I'm not, as qualified to talk about other faiths. But it does seem to me that the Judeo-Christian tradition has a particularly good way of melding with science. And it's, for example, not any coincidence, I don't think, that that much of the scientific method was developed in an explicitly Christian culture in Western Europe 200-300 years ago when Christianity, again, dominated the culture and the belief systems of most of the people, because people embarked on the scientific endeavor because they believed that God was rational and made sense, and therefore the created universe should also be rational and should make sense. And so that scientific endeavors should be successful in trying to understand how the universe works. This could be contrasted with certain Eastern religions, which view the universe as arising out of chaos or as arising out of the conflict between competing supernatural forces, in which case you could more reasonably have potentially suggested that the universe wouldn't make sense, that it would be just sort of endless conflict without any particular direction.
In your investigation of this relationship between religion and science, can we go back in history and see how long science and faith have been at odds? Can that be pinpointed in any way?
Well, I would say it's been, you know, more or less from day one. But, you know, again, this is not necessarily at odds at a fundamental level. It's much more along the lines of a negotiation process, of faith trying to figure out, you know, people of faith trying to come to understand the scientific evidence and try to understand what the implications of that are for faith, and then people of science trying to take the empirical observations they have made and trying to figure out, okay, well, how do these things, how are these things guided by or interact with any conception we might have of any sort of supernatural or divine presence in the universe?
Mm-hmm. Are there examples you can think of the impact of this perceived divide between religion and science?
Well, yeah, there are ones that many people know, which are, you know, the Galileo's conflict with the church over whether the Earth was the center of the universe or whether the sun was is probably one of the earliest conflicts. But there have been later ones over another popular one that people know about more recently is conflicts between sort of very strong arguments for the role of evolution versus creation. One of the ones that I like to highlight that's maybe less well known is there was a theory hundreds of years ago called spontaneous generation, which was the idea that life could form out of non-living things. So things like maggots would grow in cornmeal. So you'd put out a bowl of cornmeal, and if you left it out for long enough, there would be maggots growing in it. And so the understanding of that was that this happened because cornmeal and air came together to produce maggots. And this was a common point of view 300 years ago. And then 200 years ago, scientists came along and showed that, in fact, this was not right. But before that, everyone agreed, not just scientists. Scientists believed in spontaneous generation, and people of faith did. So, for example, Christians believed in spontaneous generation because of stories like the Israelites finding quail in the desert. They said, well, this was spontaneous generation of the quail somehow in the desert. And then the scientific experiments came along that said, no, this is not the normal course of events. The maggots are only there because flies have come in and laid eggs. Spontaneous generation is not the normal course of things. And, of course, then both the religious folks and the scientific folks adjusted their viewpoints to say, oh, wait, now we understand things better, that, you know, the maggots don't form in cornmeal normally. And if the Israelites found quail in the desert, it wasn't because of spontaneous generation. It was because of some miraculous intervention that must have happened there.
Mm. I wonder if you see where science has been improved by its relationship with faith. Does that ever happen?
Yes. So I think the scientific inquiry by itself is intended to be isolated from things like faith traditions. These are sort of biased. The truth is supposed to be objective. It's supposed to be, in science, it's supposed to be independent of the person who observes it. And so if the person has faith or if the person doesn't have faith, the scientific observations we make are supposed to be the same. So in that sense, faith doesn't day-to-day affect the way we do science, but it does affect the way that we direct science. You know, you could argue that, you know, one of the reasons that that we spend so much time scientifically investigating things like human health is because we have a value on reducing human pain and extending human lifetime and alleviating human suffering. And for a lot of people, the motivation for doing that comes from faith. In other words, comes from some faith-based motivation that God or that God has some desire to alleviate pain and suffering amongst humans, then that to some extent humans are agents in that process of alleviating pain.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you think, as a scientist, if science would be in the position, not now, not in 100 years, but theoretically in a position to answer all mysteries of life. Are there any corners of our existence that rule out science as a means to explain it?
Well, you know, this is a really interesting question, because I think this is a perception that many people have of science, that, you know, that science sort of squeezes faith out, that, you know, you answer questions with science and it squeezes out any religious or faith-based explanation of things. But this is, and I find that, you know, for people of science, this is maybe, maybe some people view this as an ultimate goal, and for people of faith, there's some secret hidden fear that science is eventually going to explain away some faith-based tradition.
Right, and there will be no mystery to life anymore.
Right, and so I think this really misses out on the fact that there are different layers of meaning when I try to answer a question. So, you know, so you can't see me right now, and neither can any of the people listening at home, but I'm wearing a blue shirt. And you could ask me the question, well, Troy, why is your shirt blue? And I could say, well, my shirt is blue. I could give a chemical explanation for this. I could say that, you know, there's a high concentration of 6,6-dibromo-indigo, a dye that actually makes my shirt blue. And I could try to prove this explanation by trying to wash the shirt and remove the dye from the shirt, thereby giving a chemical proof of why my shirt is blue. I could also give you an explanation for why my shirt is blue by simply saying that I think it brings out the color in my eyes, which really doesn't get to the chemical reason why my shirt is blue, but gets to the reason of why I am wearing a blue shirt. Mm-hmm. And those are different layers of meaning. They're both correct. I am wearing the shirt because it brings out the color of my eyes, and it is also blue because of the dye. Neither of them is incorrect or competing. They just provide different layers of understanding of what you want to know about the color of my shirt. And the same is true for many scientific questions. You know, when we ask, you know, why is something the way it is? Why do bacteria have flagella? Why do we have opposable thumbs? Why? Science is going to provide mechanistic kinds of explanations for these kinds of things. You know, A caused B, which caused C, which caused D. But many times we want explanations that go at a deeper level of meaning than that. In other words, the why question of, you know, well, what caused this or what was the purpose of this? And ultimately, science doesn't give those kinds of answers to the questions. And so the mystery and meaning questions will always be there, even if science eventually reaches the point of explaining every mechanistic question you could want the answer to.
So you mean we'll never answer the question of the meaning of life?
Right. So, yeah, so you could ask for the meaning of life. Science will never give us an answer for the meaning of life. It will give us evidence about what life is, but it won't ever tell us what the meaning is.
As you've looked at this in the past and in the present, the intersection between science and faith, what do you see in the future? Always this similar divide between science and faith, the misperceptions, the myths that you've described a few of here, or will it evolve in a different way, a better sort of melting pot of these two?
Well, you know, it's certainly my hope as an educator that through education we can overcome some of these things, and we can move to people to a deeper level of engagement. Because one of the things I like to see is that people live a holistic life where the different aspects of their lives work together. Will this issue ever go away? Probably never go away, in the sense that, you know, with every new generation, there's a new set of questions and a new set of dialogue points and a new set of tension points. And so I think the process of educating on this, you know, goes on and on and on as long as there are new people to be educated.
Mm-hmm. And do you see it entering, well, modern politics? For instance, climate science has to be, one of the areas.
Yes, so I mean, that certainly is an area where sort of both education on science and what science does and doesn't teach us, I think, is very important for informing things like climate change. But then, you know, also for people of science to understand, you know, for climate change or, you know, another, you know, the other hot button issues are things like evolution and you know, abortion or other things that have some intersection politically between sort of a scientific position and a faith-based position, that, you know, just having the evidence doesn't make the decision about what we should do self-evident. So given the same sets of evidence based on different positions that we take, we can come to different conclusions. And trying to reason through the commonly held values in order to try to understand what we as a people can do to try to, you know, ward off climate change is one great example.
Troy Van Voorhis is a professor in the Department of Chemistry at Massachusetts Institute of Technology at MIT. He'll be giving a talk on Monday at Iowa State University, and the topic of his talk is something that he's been talking about with us today, titled Certainty, Is Science All You Need? Troy Van Voorhis, thank you very much for spending the time with us.
Thank you very much.
I don't know about you, but this conversation brought to my mind the work of the great scientist Carl Sagan. And we have a few seconds, so let's listen to one of Carl Sagan's many thoughts about our cosmos.
The cosmos is all that is, or ever was, or ever will be. Our contemplations of the cosmos stir us. There's a tingling in the spine, a catch in the voice, a faint sensation as if a distant memory of falling from a great height. We know we are approaching the grandest of mysteries. The size and age of the cosmos are beyond ordinary human understanding, lost somewhere between immensity and eternity is our tiny planetary home, the Earth.
And that's it for today. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. If you want to hear a podcast of this program or any of our other prior talk shows, go to iowapublicradio.org. You'll find podcasting and on-demand audio of River to River and Talk of Iowa. Our theme music is written and performed by the River Monks. We always welcome your comments and questions about this program. You can contact us anytime. Here's our email, river2river@iowapublicradio.org. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.